Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 4, Text 30. Pratante
Tati
Patike Masi
Sri
Ratram Samuposhita
Snata
Karachika
Lindyam
Harimaruvane Chayat Pratante Kartike Masi Sri Ratram Samupakante. At the end of observing the vow, Kartike, in the month of Kartika, Masi, in that month, Sri Ratram, for 3 nights, Samuposhita, after completely observing the fast. Snata, after bathing. Kadachit,
once upon a time.
Kalindyam, on the bank of the Jamuna. Harim,
unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Madhuvane, in that part of the Vrindavan area known as Madhuvan.
In that part of the Vrindavan area known as Madhuvan.
Archayat,
worship the Lord.
Translation, in the month of Kartika, after observing that vow for 1 year, after observing a fast for 3 nights, and after bathing in the Jamuna, Maharaj Ambarish worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, in Madhuvan. Read the next verse. Following the regulative principles of Mahabhisheka, Maharaj Ambarish performed the bathing ceremony for the deity of Lord Krishna with all paraphernalia, and then he dressed the deity with fine clothing, ornaments, fragrant flower garlands, and other paraphernalia for worship of the Lord. With attention and devotion, he worshipped Krishna and all the greatly fortunate brahmanas who were free from material desires. So we see the advanced level of devotion that Maharaj Ambarish had attained. Also his wife, yesterday we read that his wife was equally as qualified as her husband, especially spiritually. I was talking yesterday a little bit about how the wife has to be equally qualified on material level and especially spiritually. Otherwise, as Prabhupada says in his purport, that it is very difficult to continue in household affairs if the husband and it's not that equality there, or there's not that enthusiasm there in both husband and wife, and it's very, very essential. Even in the in the brahmachari ashram, in all ashrams, is essential, isn't it, that everyone show enthusiasm, not only the grihastha ashram, the vanaprastha, the sannyasa ashram, the brahmachari ashram. If the brahmacharis are living in the ashram, but one or two are just moping around, brahmacharini ashram, they're just moping around like this, don't want to do anything for Krishna, always dark, morose. One time the disciple was with Prabhupada in Africa, and he was like a dark cloud, moping around. This went on for a few days, and Prabhupada finally said, why I have to look at your morose face? Something is wrong, because the process of devotional service is joyful. What is that verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Joy. Raja Vijaya, Raja Guya, Bhagavad Gita. Susukam, Susukam, Atam Avya, isn't it? It's supposed to be joyful. The soul by nature is joyful. So if you're following Krishna consciousness and you're not feeling joyful, that means you're not following Krishna consciousness properly. Because some will blame Krishna consciousness. Oh, this Krishna consciousness is not good. I chanted. I did. I'm still morose. Still unenthusiastic. You have to give some time. You have to be patient. At the moment you're very sick. You're a sick boy. Sick girl. When you're, you know, what are you sick with? The material disease. You've got a very strong dose of the material disease. Very, very strong. So strong. And it's been going on. You've had it a long time. So you have to take the medicine. Just like we sang yesterday, Jeev Jago Jeev, you know, Gora Chandra Bole. Enechi Osori. Enechi Osori Maya. Enechi Osori. The medicine. What is the medicine? That's the manual. The Maha Mantra. You have to take the medicine. So in the beginning when you take medicine, and you actually, there's one medicine that is very powerful. You don't have to worry about taking any other medicine. But let's say you're sick and you've tried a whole bunch of medicines. You've got a whole cabinet full of medicines. This pill and that pill and the other pills and the other whole thing. Tried it all, not much success. And then someone comes along, here's one medicine, you can just wipe out your chest of medicines and just take this one. Everyone will be an ecstasy. Oh, if we can just take one. But actually, it's a fact. You can just take one medicine, and that's the Harinam, the Maha Mantra. And it's very, very powerful, this medicine. Very, very powerful. But you have to keep taking it. You have to keep taking the medicine. Otherwise, if you stop taking your medicine, what's the danger if you stop taking medicine when you're very sick? What's the danger, if you can say?
Relapse.
Relapse. You can, you know, suffer a relapse. Isn't it? Oh, he's going good, took the medicine, getting better, stopped taking it. Some reason or other, he stopped, I feel good now. Or, you know, I'm sick of taking it. You know, I want to try something different. You know, let's see what it's like without taking the medicine. Now you've got to keep taking it. You say maybe so many reasons why he stopped taking it. But when he stops taking it, then the relapse. We see devotees stop taking the medicine, stop chanting, stop engaging in devotional service. They get a relapse. They get a relapse of the dose of the disease. Big, but the disease comes on again. What is that disease? You know. This is Maya. That's the disease. You're attached to the Maya. Take the disease for Maya, or Shodi Maya, Enechi or Sodi Maya. Ashi Baralagi. Harinama Maha Mantra, isn't it? The disease is this attachment to Maya, this material energy, that which is not. That's our disease. And we're embracing it physically, mentally, intellect, everything. We're embracing it. So the relapse is a relapse of the material disease. So we see devotees who stop taking the medicine. And the good thing about this medicine, actually it's ultimately it's just nectar. You couldn't get a better medicine than this. It's so good. It just, just like in the early days when the devotees first were chanting in New York, you know, they had this, used to have these stay high forever kirtans. People, they take drugs to get high. Right? Why? Because they're low. Must mean, right? If you're taking something to get high, whether it's alcohol or drugs or anything, that means you're not high. You must be low. And people these days, they can't do anything practically without some form of intoxication. It's so hard in the material world. They're working, you know, working. You know, at Friday night, you know, after work or whatever, you know, they just want to blot it all out. Sometimes we go chanting. He's chanting down the street. We go past the pub and all the people in the pub, and go, oh, Hare Krishna, they're waving their beer, but come on in. Come on in and have a few beers. But of course, you know, we don't do that because we're already high. We don't need a beer. We don't need a beer. We don't need a pill. We don't need a bit of grass. Why do we need these things? We're chanting Hare Krishna. Actually, one of the devotees told me that when he was distributing books, he was going to the restaurant tables and that. He said before he was a devotee, he was a big beer drinker. He used to like his beer, especially on a hot day. So he went to the tables, he was going, real hot day. It was up in the Sunshine Coast. Really hot day. One of those hot, humid Sunshine Coast days. So he was going around and he was looking at all the cold beers on the table. He was thinking, gee. The thought came in his mind, he said. I have to admit, he said, the thought came in my mind, I wouldn't mind a cold beer. He said, but no, I stopped myself because I knew it would be one, after one, it'll be two, it'll be three, it'll be five, it'll be ten, then that'll be it. I'll be right full on back into it again. So I just stopped myself. So it's a fact, you know, that we have, you know, when you're sick, you get the relapse and you want to, sometimes you're getting well. Sometimes the treatment is quite strong. You know, the treatment is quite strong, and you, every now and again you feel, oh, this treatment is worse than the disease. Right? You know, it's so tough following the treatment. Just like Radha Raman was telling you, you know, after his accident, he had to go and work out, you know, like, you know, use the legs, and he said it was really hard. It would have been a lot easier just to forget about it. So, sometimes devotees feel like that. Oh, this treatment is tougher than the disease. This chanting Hare Krishna, getting up in the morning, coming to the temple, hearing the Bhagavatam class, doing devotional service. Forget it. It's too tough. Oh, I'll have a bit more disease, thanks. It's easier. It seems to be that instantaneous pleasure. It just hits you straight away. You know, I have to try very hard for it. Just boom, it's right there. And then you pick up a beer, drink it. You know, go here, go to a movie, go do this, go do that. It's so easy. It's readily available. At your fingertips. So at your fingertips, you don't have to do anything practically. It's everywhere. It's all engrossing and all encompassing. It's all surrounding. You just have to walk out the front door. Well, these days I don't even walk out the front door. I was talking to Grihastha godbrother and godsister of mine, they say, we can't get the kids out of the door. You know, before, you know, our generation, we couldn't wait to get out the door. You know, get away from the parents and get away from, and get out with all your friends. And said, these days, the kids, they just stay inside. Everything's all this home entertainment. You know, they got the computer, everyone's got a computer. The daughter's got a computer, the son's got a computer, the other son's got a computer. They all sit up in their rooms on the computers. They got their own sound systems, their own TVs. Yeah, they just sit in their rooms all day. You know, and then, you know, you've got an indoor pool, and they just jump in the pool. They say, actually, I read a survey in the paper in Sydney, that a research report, that for the average Australian family, it costs to raise two kids up to the age of 20, it costs $400,000 in Sydney. I don't know that per, but in Sydney it cost you $400,000 to raise two kids to the age of 20. $200,000, that's like, what's that? You know, 20. It's $10,000 a year each. That's what it costs. And now, it's not even up to 20, they're staying home up until 25. Staying home up until 30. Because, you know, it's cheap at home. It costs a lot of money out there. And besides, you know, you can stay at home and you've got all the parents are just providing everything, you know, the entertainment system, the computers, and the food, just open the fridge, help yourself, right? You can't get them to do anything. He said, we had a huge argument here the other day. I tried to get my son to go up the shop. He wouldn't do it. He didn't want to do it. Why don't you want to do it? No, because I don't want to do it. He's just up there. Actually, he wanted the things. So why don't you go up the shop and buy them? No, you're going out anyway, Dad, aren't you? Why don't you get them? Why don't you get them? And the kids are becoming so lazy. They said they ring up from home. They ring up from home and get the parents to pick up all the soft drinks and all of this when the shop's just up the road, but the parents are out running around, sweating away, trying to make a living. The kids are just making their orders at home on the phone. And then the parents at the end of that to make up the lunch and the dinner for them, they just sit on the computer. Yeah, just leave it there, thank you. And this godbrother said, oh, when did your last life die? When did your last life die, right? So this is the mentality these days, isn't it? The people, it's just everywhere, you know, and it's becoming more and more. It's at the fingertips. And instant gratification. Instant. But, you know, actually, you have to actually see what is the real quality of your life living indoors. All these kids staying indoors, they look really kind of emaciated and pasty. They never get outside to the sun, you know. They just stay inside and, you know, never get any exercise hardly there. You know, they just sit at the keyboard all day. And of course, you've got some types, there's sporty types, they just get out all the time. You know, they don't, you know, a lot of the kids these days, a big percentage just stay at home. They're just in the screens all day. And then when they go downtown, they just go down in the video park. You know, I can't believe those places. You know, you go past them on Harinam from time to time. they're just like crazy in there, right? They're all just completely, usually you're kind of Asian guys or something, right? Or Chinese guys or something, right? And they're in there just going berserk, you know, totally. And you practically have to do somersaults or go right in there with a kirtan to get their attention, you know? We were standing outside one of these. I thought these guys need extra mercy in there. We were standing outside one of these places and chanting, and no one lifted their head as if we weren't there. We weren't even there. You know, it's not that you see the Hare Krishnas every day of the week chanting and playing, banging drums and cartels and cymbals out, you know. But still, they're so... They've got their using their feet and they're using all sorts of things. So people, they're going crazy. It's instant. It's like It's just a craziness out there, actually, isn't it? Just a craziness. They're trying to satisfy their senses, you know. And Narad Muni, when he was preaching to King Pratibhasha about, and he told the story of King Puranjana, he said, "Yeah, this body is like a city, and with many pathways and roads and gardens and this and that and the other, and there's like exit gates." And King Puranjana would go outside the exit gates, and actually the exit gates of his body, the two eyes, the nostrils, the ears, and the anus, the genital, these are the exit gates. So the living entity always tries to go out of it. Even within the body itself, there's not sufficient gratification. There's some gratification within the body itself, but then the living entity wants to go outside of the body through its eyes, its ears, and then get the extra sense gratification. And people get attached to all sorts of things, you know, and primarily, you know, in the human being, not only human being, all species, man to woman to man. He told the story of King Puranjana, who was so attached to his wife, the queen. So attached. Whenever the queen stood up, he stood up. Whenever she sat down, he sat down. Whenever she walked out, he walked out. Whenever she ate, he ate. Whenever she lay down, he lay down. Whenever she felt tired, he felt tired. It's like the story of King Puranjana. So attached to things in the world. But where does it all end up? Where does it all end up? Who knows? Who knows? Because, you know, you've got your karma. Sometimes, even if someone's powering away, and boom, they meet an untimely death. They put their foot off the sidewalk and onto the road and get squished by a bus. You know, I've seen that a couple of times. on Sankirtan, these guys get squished by buses. You know, it was pretty amazing when you see things like that. So, either that or, you know, so many things happen. But ultimately, you know, it just gets crazier and crazier and crazier. And people go to further and further extremes to try to gratify themselves, gratify their, you know, they have these extreme sports. You know, they have these labels, no fear. It's like Ugrashrava, he looks for no fear. He gave me all these t-shirts, no fear. I got one in here. Rip the Curl, Quicksilver. You know, he knew all the Quicksilver guys and Rip Curl guys, and no fear, no fear. Extreme sports. And you go into these shops, like these surf shops especially, you know, the music's pumping away. Boom, 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 you know. And people are all profiling in there, you know, they got the glasses on, you know, those Oakleys, and, you know, they were walking around profiling, right? And so, and they were just crazed, actually. It's a crazy situation. It's totally being led around by the... It's as if someone's got, you know, like a you know, some sort of... You know, they put the ring through the nose, you know, with the bulls in it, they put the ring in and they're just leading them around, you know. Leading around over here, there's like... They walk over here, buy this, then they walk over there, buy that. And then they go from that shop and they walk along and get led around somewhere else. So, of course, you know, everyone's an illusion. They're thinking, oh, this is great. This is fantastic. But, you know, the pressure of allurement is becoming stronger and stronger and stronger. Now they're saying that the X generation, the young kids and everything, you know, the boys are all, you know, they're totally sort of, by the advertising companies, they're totally locked into a certain image of themselves. You know, they have to buy, everything has to be a brand name. You know, I mean, you talk to any kids up to like 18 or something. You know, whatever they've got to have the Bollé glass. Not just Orton, they've got to have the Bollé ones or the Ray-Ban. It's got to be Ray-Ban or Bollé, or they've got to eat Nutri-Grain. Right? I had a boy with me, you know, a young boy, about 16. And then I had, there was a few others I was talking to, and they're all the same. You've got to have the label kind of T-shirts, no fear, you know, or, you know, extremes. Ray-Ban or, you know, the glasses. And it's all got to be top-notch. But the girls are a little bit different. The girls, they'll buy anything that looks good. If it looks good, they'll buy it. Whether it's, you know, designer or not designer. But the boys especially are totally, you know, and so they're locked in. They're brainwashed, actually. But people accuse us, actually, but really it's the other way around. You know, people are totally... I mean, these young kids now, it's all, you know, on the computer, and then, you know, they download and all this stuff gets down, buy this, do that, go here, be a this, be a that. Right, and you know, you can imagine when you're a young kid, you're growing up with all this stuff. You know, you got to be kind of cool. You got to be seen to be cool. Got to be with the right sort of people, right sort of friends. This is all nirmana moha jita shandadosha. This is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita in this false prestige. It's there in older people. It's there in young people. It's there in middle age. It's there right throughout the life. Something you have to get rid of if you want to advance spiritually. It's moha. It's illusion. Nirmana moha jita sangadosha ajatna vidya vinita karma vandaya vimukta sukta dukkha sangaya jihanti muna abhyanta. So, you know, we have to get, you know, false prestige to be seen with the right type of people, to have the right type of wife, to have the right type of husband, to drive the right type of car, to have the right type of house, to live in the right type of suburb, to have the right type of job, to go to the right type of school, to be with the right type of friends. With the young, you know, the young people, they wouldn't be caught dead with the oldies. I always like that. Oh, my parents always wanted to take me here and there, you know, but when you got to a teenager, the last place you wanted to go anywhere was your parents. Right? Oh, we'll give you an extra double allowance this week if you come here. Nah, it's not worth it. So I remember a few times saying like that. Nah, it's not worth it. Oh, spend the whole day with the oldies, forget it. So, you know, people, they think like that. And it's still, I mean, nothing's changed. There's the next generation down, they're thinking the same thing. And it goes through history, it's always been like that. The young generation always criticise the old generation. Oh, these guys, they really, we're the ones that are going to really do something big. And so it's this generation. They were doing it in the 1800s and the 1700s and the 1600s. It's always the young generation, the old generation, and hanging out with your friends. And then when you get older, then it's another set of friends. And then when you get real old, another set of friends. And in this way, the whole life is illusion. It goes past you, and then the life ends. And it's all, you know, I read yesterday in the paper, this lady, a French lady, academic, right? And she ended her life, and she was 80. She ended her life, and before it all goes bad. She said, I've had a good life up to now. And she wasn't that sick, but she had a leaking heart valve or something like that. And she said, I want to end it all atheist. I want to end it all before it goes bad. So I felt actually very sorry. I said, this is a very foolish lady. I said, whatever she thinks whatever she thinks life is it actually irrelevant? It's actually irrelevant. They're thinking life is just, there's nothing after this life and that's it, I cease to exist. But the fact is, they continue to exist. You're taking your life, but you're going to become a ghost. blogger, it is one verse. Teshan Kupata Dishinam Patam Pansita. Yes, but imagine this paragraph. It's like, you know, the blind leading the blind. You know, you go, the blind leads the other one, and everyone walks off the cliff. So, unfortunate in material life, but you know, people are totally convinced. And someone who's the gross materialist, you know, it's very hard to convince them. Therefore, Prabhupada said, for the masses, he said, just kirtan and prasada. For the masses. So that should be our program. You have kirtan, you have prasada. It's like the Rathi Yatra or something like that. You have kirtan, you end up in the park, you give out prasada. And he said, and for those who are more serious, more sincere, they want, you know, they want to know something about the philosophy, you know, then we'll speak to them today. This actually, the Hare Krishna movement is meant for serious people. They're not so serious people, like, you know, even if they're a little bit inquisitive, they cannot follow it, actually. Because you need to be serious to follow it. You know, there are many other so-called yoga paths and this and that, and many people follow them. But those who are actually serious will... It's to follow other yogas and live in the modern materialistic society is incompatible. You can't do it. One Buddhist man I was talking to, he'd been living in Thailand, a modern Buddhist monastery. And he said, since he's been back, he can see that actually this Buddhism is totally incompatible with Western society. He said, I don't know why we're even setting up anything over here, because, you know, when I was in the monastery, you know, there was a certain procedure, very strict, in Thailand. And now, there's someone trying to follow Buddhism over here in the West, he says, it's totally incompatible. You can't do it. And most yoga, of course, they're atheists and voidists or whatever. But, you know, even the yoga system means you have to cut yourself off from society. That's true yoga. So someone may say, oh, I'm a follower of this path, that path, the other path. But, you know, to live in the West, I don't know how they're doing it. Really. They mustn't be really following it very, very seriously. Because if you were to follow it seriously, you'd have to cut yourself off and live like a hermit or something. Go up in the hills and live by yourself and do the yoga. But Krishna consciousness is so nice that you can live anywhere. You can live in the Himalaya, or you can live in the Vrindavan, or you can live in the West. As long as you're practicing and following Krishna consciousness, then you'll actually make spiritual advancement. You'll actually make spiritual advancement. And the sign of spiritual advancement, you'll be more devoted. You'll be more devoted. Don't worry that, oh, you're not immediately at the highest levels. You know, sometimes we get like that. Oh, I've been following, just like I was in Jakarta, one devotee. An old devotee, man. Been devoted for about 20 years. He said, sometimes it seems I've been following a long time, but I, you know, sometimes I lack enthusiasm. It seems mechanical. He said, what is the reason? It seems mechanical. And I said, well, because your mind is not purified yet. Just like deity worship here, we see that Maharaj Ambarish did an Abhishek. He followed the Kartik Vrata. Rather, he followed the Ekadasi Vrata and the Dwadasi Vrata, and then in the month of Kartik, did some extra austerities. Did some tapasya. Extra austerities, because it said in the month of Kartik, if one does follows offering a lamp to the deity, I was just giving a class about this in Adelaide, the benefits of offering a lamp. Even if one just offers one lamp to the deity in the month of Kartik, the benefit is, you know, you cannot calculate the benefit. All the sinful reactions that you've accrued for a kalpa are wiped out. That's what the statement of the Shastra says. For a kalpa, just by offering a lamp in the month of Kartik. We know that famous story from the Puranas about the mouse that used to come into the deity room at night and look around for food and would munch on the ghee, and into the lamp would have the ghee in there, and the ghee would, and the mouse would come up, and one night there was a lit one still. The mouse started eating the ghee, but the whiskers caught fire, and then jumping up and down. The deity thought it was just dancing. Radha and Krishna were there, and said, oh, the mouse is dancing for me. And next life came back, queen. Liked to offer aarti, especially the ghee lamp. And liked to dance for Krishna. this was the reward. It just, and at the end, technically we went back home, back to Godhead. So, you know, doing something in Kartik, offering a lamp, performing austerities, you know, it is said that if you give in charity, just like Mary Ambrish gave in charity to the Brahmanas, if you give in charity in the month of Kartik, it's, you know, it's more than giving a whole mountain of gold in charity. Just give a little charity. Even if it's just a little bit. If you were to give a whole mountain of gold in charity, if you give a little bit of charity in Kartik, it's more than that. So Kartik is a very, very good month, and that's why, and why, actually it was explained, I was reading the Shastras about it, but because Kartik is the is a very pleasant season, and not only that, it's the season where Krishna enjoys so many wonderful pastimes like Rasa dance, and the Dogadana. So many different pastimes go on in this season. So this season is very especially pleasing to Krishna and to Radha. And mercy is available more freely in this season. Prabhupada explains it in this way. And just like sometimes a business will have a month-long sale. Have a month-long sale. You can get things cheaper that month. And generally the business starts to attract new customers. But Krishna, during the month of Kartik, gives extra mercy just to attract more to take up devotional service. The Prabhupada explained it like that during the month of Kartik. The month of Kartik just finished, right? So, Maharaj Ambarish performed these, he was performing the year-long Nikodasi and the Devadasi, and then in Kartik he did extra, he fasted for 3 nights, but, and we'll read on how he got into a dilemma because the Vasa Muni came, and you know, he had to break his fast, but had, you know, he had the guests there, and he couldn't eat before the guests. You're not supposed to, you know, invite someone to your house and eat before them. And there's a Vedic injunction. A guest coming to your house, whether invited or uninvited, has to be treated like God. You have to treat them like God. Dabasa Muni was an uninvited guest. Actually, there's one statement that when an uninvited Brahmana comes, that's very auspicious. Brahmana comes, whether invited or uninvited. Especially, you know, who was that devotee who passed away, and then some Brahmana came out of nowhere, just came into the room. One of our devotees passed away a few years back, and the devotees noted that one Brahmin, a local Brahmin, just came uninvited, just came in. So that was a very auspicious sign.
Gauri
was it? Yeah, I think it was Gauri. Yeah, quite a few years ago. Gauri Mataji, when she passed away, the uninvited Brahmin came. So very, very auspicious. Of course, Dabasa Muni, he's a bit, he's a very, very advanced soul. But he's also a bit touchy. We'll read on about that. And anyway, we see here Maharaj Ambarish's devotion to Krishna, that he had his deity, his abhishek, and with love he worshipped the deity. You know, he dressed the deity, he bathed the deity, bathed and dressed the deity, offered nice garlands. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, we were reading last night, the king from South India, it was mentioned there by Sanatana Goswami that every day he would be something new in the deity worship. The king, in other words, the deity worship, he would make sure the deity worship didn't become, you know, for the you know, the brahmanas and the priests doing the deity, didn't become hackneyed or stale. And he made sure that the facilities were such that there was always something new to keep their enthusiasm. Of course, if one's very, very advanced devotee, you know, there's no question of hackneyed or stale. Actually, in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami mentions this. Deity worship is performed by the beginners and by the very advanced. Now, the difference is that when the beginners do deity worship, they're doing it under rule and regulation, following the instruction of their guru and the acharyas. And there may not be such much of a feel. They're just following. This is called Aropa Siddhi Bhakti. They're just following the instructions. They know that this is what they should be doing. And some feeling sometimes comes, other times it's not so much there. Sometimes they become very familiar with the deity, take the deity for granted, or a bit rough with the deity, and neglectful. This is some of the symptoms that can happen on the neophyte level. But with the advanced devotees, they're also worshipping the deity, But they are actually having a spontaneous relationship with the deity. The deity is Krishna. And there's many stories of very, very advanced devotees, and the deity reciprocating with his devotee, who is very, very... You know, there's that Bhakti Bihari temple in Vrindavan, isn't it? So that, who's that Swami? Haridas Swami, right? And yet he was so lovingly devoted to his deity, to Krishna, every day, that one time he had to leave and go to the marketplace to buy a few things and do a few things. And the deity missed him so much that he jumped off the altar and followed him. So from that time, the pujaris, that's why they close the curtains all the time there. They only allow the deity to see, just in case the deity sees one of his beloved devotees and wants to leave. So they open the curtain, and then they close the curtain. You know, you're just coming forward, and all of a sudden they close the curtain. No, they didn't even see the deity. But they have this leela, and then I found out why they do it, because they don't want the deity to leave, just like the deity left with Haridas Swami. So, you know, there's many stories like that. You know, very, very advanced devotees. You know, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was known to speak to his deity. And then we know Sanat Goswami, you know that story of how he had his deity Krishna in the tree. And he was just offering some simple chapatis and everything like that. And then the deity spoke to him and said, well, can you at least put some salt in there? Oh, now you want salt, he said. Now next you want sweets. Next you want all these other things. So there's a whole kind of little, you know. Well, I mean, the neophyte, we can't talk to the deity like that. Nor is the deity most probably not going to talk to us like that. You know, so we're just doing. But we have to be careful. Don't become over familiar. Don't become neglectful. Don't commit offences. Seva aparad, you know, these are in the matter of worshipping the deity. We should take inspiration and enthusiasm from great Vaishnavas like Maharaj Ambarish. When we find ourselves feeling a bit, Mr. Vodi in Jakarta was there, you know, like a pujari, so long time, he said sometimes it feels a bit mechanical. I said, well, the reason is, it's actually not mechanical, but your mind's not purified yet. When your mind becomes purified, you'll see how. You just have to keep working and trying to understand what you're doing and become enthused by associating either through reading or about great Vaishnavas, or associating with others who are very, very advanced in this particular service, or just in general, and you will remain enthused, and it'll be very inspirational for you. So Maharaj Ambarish did that, and he worshipped the Supreme Person. Now, he was living in the Vrindavan area, and in this Madhuban area, and after bathing the deity and so many paraphernalia, worshipping, clothing, ornaments, garlands, all sorts of other paraphernalia, with attention and devotion. So, you know, we have to follow in this way. We have to, when we're worshipping the deity, we have to be attentive to worship the deity, and we have to have some devotion. At least we should try to be like that. Maharaj Ambarish didn't have to try, he was just spontaneously like that. If you have to try, that means you're not actually on that level. You don't understand. If you have to try for it, Some devotees, they think themselves very spontaneous. But if they have to try to be spontaneous, that means they're not actually spontaneous, because spontaneous means you don't have to try. But Maharaj Ambarish didn't even have to try. He was just automatically devoted, but automatically very attentive to Krishna. And we have to remember that the deity, we're getting, worshipping the deity is training us up to understand Krishna or Lord Chaitanya as a person. We're very much steeped in impersonalism, although we may not even know it. We're still, even as devotees, we've got a lot of impersonal sort of conditioning. And worshipping the deity is training us up to see Krishna, see God as a person. And we shouldn't just think that this is a statue here. We try to understand that Krishna is a person. I remember we used to have a picture of Prabhupada on the Vyasa Sanctuary every morning, get up there and arrange to put the garland on the picture. I don't think we had the deities in those days. You know, just pictures, and then you arrange it and move it around. So Prabhupada actually came and he sat on the outside. I went and put it down. I was doing the same thing, as if it was just a picture. And he looked up and he said, that's enough. So, you know, in other words, I just was continuing on, you know, thinking that here's the picture still, but actually Prabhupada was there. So, you know, we have to get out of this this kind of it's a stereotype kind of way we do things, and we have to understand that Krishna is a person, Lord Chaitanya is a person, and he's not just a statue sitting up there, but that we should reciprocate with him as a person. Anyone got a question or comment?
Yes, Maharaj, you were saying about enthusiasm, but like something we see a lot not in these conversations, like devotees can be very enthusiastic about the process, like have faith in the process, and even hearing the chanting service to the dance, like trying to cultivate a mood of love for the Lord, yet be extremely cynical, burnt out with the institution, and we see it very burnt out or cynical about the institution, and perhaps they've been taught like, becomes
such
a thing
for him, I don't think you can totally generalize like that. It's not that there's a lot of I don't know. There's many different devotees and there's many different reasons and Prabhupada wanted an institution. What's the answer? Not have an institution?
No.
Prabhupada wanted an institution and he wanted temples and he wanted an international governing body. He wanted all these things. It would be easy, everyone chant Hare Krishna and do it at home and do it any place you want to do it. And, if Prabhupada just traveled around the world and just said to everyone, chant Hare Krishna, he would have millions of followers. Huh? But he said, no, he had some principles, he had some rules. Not only that, he wanted an organization, and especially he wanted to attract respectable people and present the society as respectable. And it would be taken seriously. So, okay, we have to have an institution. Okay. Now, there's problems, in different individuals. Now, the institution is made up of individuals. It's not just blank buildings. The buildings are neither here nor there. The institution is made up of individuals, so sometimes there's problems with one individual to another individual, another individual to another individual. So that has to be worked through and sorted out, rather than just saying, go away and... I'm sure Prabhupada would want that we sort it out rather than going.
What I was kind of meaning with, like, something that confuses me is like you were saying about enthusiasm, and we see that these days devotees aren't really enthusiastic to move into a temple situation. Devotees are more living outside and serving according to their nature, according to their capacities, which is great. And we can see many individuals making a lot of advancements. So they joined, 10 or 15 years ago or whatever, and they've been forced to give up their studies or to, live in an ashram or whatever. They may have been very, very burnt out. So in one sense, like living outside, the devotees are making a lot of advancements, and I guess the institution is expanding. So
that's all part of this one, It's made up of grihasthas and they're made up of brahmacharis, and and as far as forcing to move into the ashram, we don't force anyone. Can leave at any moment, But there's the door. You want to walk out, you want to go out it, walk out the door. We're not forcing you to stay here. And if you feel forced, it's better you go outside, because then you'll be unenthusiastic and you'll affect everyone else. So someone who's feeling forced and feeling depressed, better they go outside. It's better for them and it's better for everyone else. Because there's nothing worse than having to live in a situation where someone's, as I said at the start of the class, mopping around, depressed and feeling forced. And you have to live in the association with such a person. The better they live outside, and Prabhupada said that, he's had devotees come to him and say like that, and he probably said, well, go, look out, who's stopping you? So, I don't know, you might feel like that, and there may be others who feel like that, but we're not forcing, and some people, believe it or not, actually like to live in the ashram. Some brahmacharis, and Prabhupada did say though, they said, not so many will live in the ashram. He did say that. He said, in the future, he said, now you're all young, but he said, in the future, how many will live in the ashrams, but how many will live outside the ashrams? He says, well, the main thing is they be Krishna conscious. Doesn't matter if you live outside or inside. You can live in the ashram and be totally admired also. Doesn't necessarily, you can be in the ashram. If you live in the ashram, you have to chant, you have to be Krishna conscious. If you live outside, you have to be Krishna conscious. The problem is that many people think that they can go out, leave the ashram and become a householder and give up their Krishna consciousness. Now, I did my years of austerity. You know, and actually I had one devotee. I did my years of tapasya, and now it's time for enjoyment. And, you know, well, Grihastha life is a sort of a license to enjoy, I guess you could say, but I probably did say that, a license to enjoy, but you know, it's regulated. It's regulated. And don't forget the regulations. Don't forget those regulations. Because the regulations actually help you. They're there for a purpose. It's just like someone who can't walk. They have to take the help of the crutches. You know. Now, you could say, I don't want the crutches. I don't try to walk without the crutches. But, you know, if you take the crutches, they help you along, and then you walk, and then you don't need the crutches. So the regulations are there. They're like our crutches. We use them, and then we become a very, very advanced. Then we don't really need to follow, you know. We don't really need them. Although, generally, one sets the example in the world for others, even if it's very, very advanced. So yeah, okay, there might be some devotees who are, you know, feeling burnt out or this or that and the other. I don't know why. But you don't live in it. You know what I'm saying? Something happened years and years ago, and I find there's a few devotees around like that. Something happened between you and this one, or you and that one, or you and that temple, years and years ago, 20 years ago, or 15 years ago, right? And you're still living in it. You've got to get out of that and move on. You know, so there's always a road ahead. You don't have to live in the past. You know what I'm saying? You know, you can always look over your shoulder to see the past. But you have to live now, and you have to see there's always a road ahead. There's always a new way of doing things. And so I don't think we should be living what happened to us in the past and just be totally absorbed in that, you know, and feel hard done by it. Well, you know, you have to get on with your life. Don't just stay in that position. So that's what I usually tell those devotees. Whatever happened, you may not have got on with this one, or something happened to there. Well, you don't have to stay there. You can go somewhere else. Sometimes it can be an excuse also. Give up my Krishna consciousness. Oh, you know, I was treated badly by this temple president. Well, go to another temple. Go to another country. Don't give up your Krishna consciousness. You just practice Krishna consciousness at home. But many people, oh, they give it up totally. But when they take it to that level, you got to, you know, I think that's using it as a bit of an excuse to actually do it and justify it. But that won't help you long term, you see. You know, maybe it's not so compatible for you working so close with the temple. And some people find more comfortable a little bit of a distance away. And the temple also finds it more comfortable that they are a bit of a distance away. You know what I'm saying? It might be mutual. They may find it more comfortable. The temple finds it more comfortable if you're a little bit of a distance away. So everyone has to find their level. And, you know, and don't worry about others so much. Just concentrate on your own Krishna consciousness. There are the devotees who are deputed to worry about others. You know what I'm saying? And if you're not deputed, and you know, then there's no need for you to worry, especially if it disturbs you. If it disturbs you, then you know, don't worry about it. Others will take care of it. You may be a very advanced devotee, very kind-hearted, and it's not none of your business, but you try to help also. There are many devotees around like that. But I don't know. There's many devotees who feel burnt out, whether it was that... You know, I think that you have to see what the history was. You know, for someone to feel burnt out from something that happened 20 years ago, there's something more to it. You know what I'm saying? There's something more to it. You can't... How long can you feel angry? You know, say you're angry. Something happened to you, or angry 10 years ago. How long can you keep on feeling angry? Really? I mean, anger is an emotion that comes and goes, right? But if you're still angry 10 years later, there's something else going on there. You can't stay... It's unnatural to stay angry at one event that happened 10 years ago. Continuously. I mean, it may come up from time to time, but continuously you feel angry at something that happened 10 years ago. Therefore, I say something else emotionally, psychologically that's disturbing you. It's not only that. It may have been that, but it's not only that. It's something else as well. And you have to try to find out what it is. You find out what it is and face it and deal with it and try to overcome it. And you don't have to do that alone. You can do it alone if you want, or you can do it with others and take the help of others. But you have to kind of be honest with yourself. What other things are there that have been disturbing me? And you know, you can actually put the blame on. It's kind of easy to put the blame on others or things, the institution, the GBC. You know, it's all kind of faceless. It's easy to put the blame on. They're easy targets. You know what I'm saying? The institution is an easy target. You don't have to really face anyone. It's just you just heap it all on the institution. I'm not belittling what you have to say, but I'm just saying sometimes it can develop into that type of thing. And people do get into this, you know, it's just like the Karmis do it too, you know. They blame the government about something or other. You know, they blame the council. They blame, there's people there. There's people who work there, and there's people in the government, there's people in the council. And, you know, find out the person you have to deal with. Don't just blame everyone. You know, just like people blame the GBC. Now, the GBC is made up of 35, 40 individuals. And believe me, you know, they're all different thinkers. I know, I'm one of them. you can't, you know, it's hard to get agreement on that body. Everyone's got a different angle. It's not that we're all kind of thinking exactly the same way. When we have a meeting, you know, it's hard to get something through because everyone's got a different opinion. And Krishna's a big subject matter because he can be known from different angles. It's not that this one's wrong and this one's right. And, you know, I've got different points of view here. So I don't say it's wrong that there's a difference of opinion, but there is. So, I mean, I think the easy thing to do would be to blame institutions, and, you know, and not try to solve the situation. I think that's what we need to do. Right? We need to solve, okay, there's problems in the institution. First of all, work out exactly where it is, because the institution means the institution is the temples, the devotees, the ashram devotees, the grihasthas, is all the institution. Where the problems lie, where the problems lie, let's have a look and see how we can improve the situation. And, you know, ultimately, Mataji, you're never going to get an ideal situation, you know. I was just talking to another devotee, and you know, you're never going to get a situation where everything's just totally 100% smooth. There will always be some problem. It's the material world. And ultimately, you have to go back home, back to God. That place, everything's smooth. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that place, everything's smooth. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.